I'm Stacy Grinsfelder from Blake Hill House.
And I'm Devin Caldwell from Our Philly Row. We're the hosts of True Tales from Old Houses.
Hey, Devin, I see you are wearing a hat today. Is it getting cold?
Yes, it is. It is 34 degrees in Philadelphia this morning when I got up and had to go for my walk. It's probably 55 degrees in the room, so it's still a little chilly up here.
It is cold. Yeah, I'm sitting here huddled up in my wool blanket. Yeah, it's cold here as well. It's just, it kind of took a turn. You know, I'll get used to it. But those first couple days where it dives below zero, it just feels much colder than normal.
Yes. And in January, you'll think it's balmy when it's 30 degrees.
Yeah, I'll be wearing short sleeves, maybe shorts, tank tops. Yeah. So what are you working on at your house?
Well, I'm doing some stained glass, which has been a lot of fun. And I just went and bought. So let me share this really quick. When you go to buy glass at the stained glass supply store, it's like a candy store. You just want to buy all the glass. And so it's very hard not to buy all the glass. I've made 3 trips now to a stained glass supply, and I've come home with lots of glass every time. So I have lots and lots and lots of glass. So I should be busy a long time.
Yeah. You're like a new knitter or someone who does, you know, needle crafts or something. And in the beginning, where you amass huge collections of every color and texture and feel. And what's your favorite color glass, do you think? Do you have a favorite?
You know, I'm so fond of deep ruby red as a color, and the color of glass that it is spectacular. But I've learned with red, which is my favorite color anyway, I've learned to use it sparingly because it goes a long ways, a little bit. And so I'm incorporating little bits of red here and there, but I don't see myself doing an entirely large piece in red.
Yeah, that would be a lot. That would be very dramatic.
Yeah, it would.
Sure. Well, I just finished, I wrapped up a quick bedroom makeover here, just making it kind of cozy and warm, getting ready for the winter. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I hate to say this, but I feel pretty confident that New York's going to go on lockdown again, unfortunately, due to the pandemic. So I've been really kind of focusing on making the house warm and cozy and someplace that we really want to be since we are going to be here.
We, too, are going into lockdown here in Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia has even stricter rules, so no more dining in restaurants. Not that I was anyway. I was always outside, but still.
Right. Well, you have to protect your health still, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. As we all do, I guess. In March, when this happened, we started to have a run of good weather, so this will be our first taste of going into this during the coldest, darkest months, and I hope everybody fares okay. It's really tough.
I do, too.
We're going to have to find ways to reach out to our community without putting our neighbors and loved ones at risk.
I feel sorry for all of these small businesses and like the restaurants, especially. You know, we have a lot of amazing restaurants in here in the city, and we want to support them as much as we can, but we've already lost several.
It happened here as well. Maybe in the next couple episodes that come out, we can try to come up with some ways that we just advice, you know, ways to help the community. So we can talk about it next time. But I'd like to kind of preemptively come up with ways to support, for us to support our communities to make it through. It's tough.
It is tough. So we have a few announcements this week. First, we want to say a big thank you, heartfelt thank you to everyone who participated in the fall fundraising merchandise event. I would call it a success, wouldn't you, Stacey?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was surprised at how many people, well, I'm not surprised. The hoodie went pretty well. People liked the hoodie.
The hoodie went really well. Yes. a lot more than I actually expected. Like maybe it's the weather. It's the season.
Right. That's true. We might have to have a, you know, True Tales from Old Houses tank top in the summer or something. I don't know. Yeah. I know. I was so grateful to everyone who pre-ordered, and people were excited about it. And it's really fun to see the logo on t-shirts and hoodies. So yes, thank you so much for everyone who pre-ordered. We will, of course, keep in touch with you about that order. Everything will ship before the holidays. And there may be a few odds and ends left over. So if you missed it, there may be an opportunity to pick up some things that are already printed. We'll see. We'll let you know.
Yeah, we definitely will.
Okay, so the other announcement is that we are gearing up for season 5, but last episode, which maybe everyone's listened to, maybe not, but you did let us know, Devin, that you will not be back for season 5.
This is true. This is true. And I'm sad, but if you listened to the last episode, you would have heard that I decided to move on and pursue my creative interests. I love the show. I love Stacey, and I'm going to miss it. And, you know, maybe I'll be around for some things. You never know. I'm not completely unavailable. I needed to kind of shift my priorities a bit.
Right. And I understand that. We've been getting some nice messages from people who say they're going to miss you. And yeah, we are going to miss you. I'm going to miss you. Naturally, the show will have to change a little, I guess, without, I guess that's a given. It'll have to change a little bit. I have some ideas, but we're still looking to season 5. And one of the things we're looking for as far as guests are people who live in non-traditional old buildings, such as a lighthouse. We're also looking for guests who are professionals in the restoration trades. So if that's you, or you know someone who would make an excellent guest, please send them our way via the True Tales from Old Houses website.
Another little thing is that we would love more of your questions for the Q&A segment. We still have some in the queue, but keep them coming in. If you have an old house related issue or dilemma, or just something you wonder about, please feel free to ask. There's a form right on the website.
All right. So with that in mind, let's go ahead, I guess, and do our Q&A for today before we jump into our guest interview. So today's question has come to us in different forms, in different ways over the past few months, and it is, what is your favorite feature of your house? Would you like to answer first, Devin?
Sure. There's a lot of favorite features. And I remember when we set foot the first time in the house, I was blown away by some of the original tile and the entry and other elements that were still there from the 19th century. But I have to say, my favorite thing is the staircase. And I've talked about the staircase before. I have blog posts about the staircase, and it's still a work in progress, although it is structurally all sound, but visually it needs some help. But the thing about the staircase that I was mesmerized by is actually the underside of the staircase. Unlike drywall, the beauty of plaster is you can make it curve and go around corners. And our stairs have angled steps in the corner that go up. And on the underside, the plaster follows that path. And it's this sinuous ribbon of plaster from the top floor down to the bottom floor that every time I see it to this day, even now when I go downstairs after we record this, I will still see it. I love that sinuous, that plaster. It's just, it's so amazing to me that it's just, and it's still all there.
Do you have pictures of that?
You know, I have pictures of it. It's very difficult to capture in a photo because it's this curve. It's like looking at it like the curve of a ribbon, and you're only going to get one little edge of it. But maybe I'll see what I can do to put a picture up on we can put on the show notes.
Yeah, that would be great. When I went to the Culbertson Mansion in Indiana at the end of, gosh, what season? These seasons are starting to blend. Anyway, the field trip episode, they had the same situation going on in the bottom of the staircase there, front and back, and it was painted on the underside. It was really incredible. They had taken this time to paint a really beautiful motif on the underside. But I can just picture it, and I would love to put a photo on the show notes.
Yeah, we'll do that.
All right, great.
So what about you? What's your favorite feature?
I was torn. When I knew we were going to answer this question, I had a really hard time. It came down to two of them, neither of which will surprise you or probably anybody who knows me or listens or reads my blog. But the two choices I had were my staircase and also my windows, my original windows here in the house. And while I love both, I do have to say that I settled on the windows because there are so many different styles in this house. And I've talked about it. I mean, probably ad nauseum to some people.
And that is really special.
Yeah. And I can't quite put a finger on why they would have chosen to do it this way. I find it so interesting that we have all of these different patterns, even on the same side of the house. You know, I have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different patterns on the front of my house that faces the street.
Maybe it was an indecisive lady of the house.
Maybe. I mean, there is
picking
some,
from a catalog.
Yeah. These were all on sale. So you can pick them out of the catalog, but you only can pick the sale items. So yeah, choose wisely, but choose them all. Yeah. I don't know. I just find it so interesting, the thought process behind how they chose to put so many different unique types of windows in this house. And of course, I'm incredibly grateful that I have these original windows to save in the first place.
Yeah, they are amazing. But that little balcony on your staircase is just that little, like, little bump out balcony thing is just so cool.
Now, I call that a Juliet balcony, which I think is correct. Is that correct inside? I know it is outside.
That's what I would actually call it. It's not really a balcony. It's just this little bump out on the landing. But you just picture like, oh, I don't know. It's just every time I see photos of it, I'm like, wow, that's just such an amazing feature.
Well, our house was built as a summer house. And I believe that they intended to have some gatherings or parties here. So part of what I picture on that staircase is maybe the ladies getting up ready upstairs and then, you know, coming down the stairs to present themselves. So maybe
making
coming
an entrance.
Down. Yeah. So stopping on that landing, making sure all eyes are on them and then descending the stairs without falling over on their faces, hopefully.
Yes, of course.
They were far better at that sort of thing than we would ever be now, I think. Graceful.
True.
Graceful.
Graceful. Yes.
All right. Well, that's it. That's my favorite thing.
Awesome.
All right. And I do want to say, too, that before, in case you missed the announcement of Devin leaving, we still do have him for two more episodes after today.
That's true. I'm not going away just yet.
No, we're going to make the most of this.
Let's pause for a minute. Now that the fall merchandise fundraising event is over, there are still ways you can support True Tales from Old Houses. Tell a friend or your local historical society, basically anyone who loves old houses, about the show. You could share us on social media. As you're listening to an episode, take a screenshot, share it with your friends and followers. Or you can also leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. We say it all the time because it's true. Those ratings and reviews help people find us and let them know that this show is worth a listen.
Now, if you missed the opportunity to get a t-shirt or hoodie, but you'd still like to show us some love with a one-time or reoccurring donation, you may do that over on the website, truetalesfromoldhouses.com. If you donate in the $20 to $25 range, we'll send you an awesome coffee mug with the True Tales from Old Houses logo on it as a thank you. Your generosity in all of these ways helps keep the show afloat, and we appreciate it very much.
Here on True Tales from Old Houses, we pride ourselves on finding a wide variety of interesting guests to share with you. When we have an opportunity to share someone new, we take it. And that's the case with today's guest. Ward Schrader is the co-host of the popular HGTV show Bargain Mansions. The show is centered around his daughter Tamara's business of rescuing and renovating large old homes in the Kansas City area. He also has a new solo adventure called Working with Ward. Love these shows or hate them, the stars of renovation entertainment are real people, and Ward has a wealth of experience and wisdom to offer. He gives us a behind-the-scenes look at what it takes to produce a TV show, and he offers practical dad advice, too. There's a little something for everyone in this interview.
I'm Ward Schrader. I am co-host of a show called Bargain Mansions with my daughter, Tamara Day, on HGTV.
Welcome, Ward. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Ward, I have to admit that you are not exactly our typical guest, and having you on the show will come, or might come, as a surprise to our listeners. And so if you'll allow, I would like to say just a few words before we fully launch into this interview, both for you and also for anyone who's listening. Is that okay?
That's fine with me.
Okay. So I just want to say that our audience is very, passionate about restoration and rehabilitation over remodeling. They know what those words mean. They use those words. And I'm sure you're familiar with the term called armchair quarterback. Well, we're kind of armchair preservationists, I guess I would say. So instead of yelling at the refs, we're yelling things at the TV like, how could you paint that woodwork? Or in my case, I'm always at loose ends over replacement windows because I do restore original windows, even the really bad ones. So we're just not fooled by the magic of television. But here's the thing, Ward. I was watching an episode, and you said something that really stood out to me, and I would like to share it. You were fixing an old trunk or something like that, and you said, and I may get this all wrong, but in essence, when I was a kid, when something was broken, we fixed it. And when we wanted something, we made it. And it hit me. I thought, there it is. That's our common ground. That's exactly what our listeners do on a regular basis. And I think you get it. So, I mean, with that in mind, I guess I'd like to start talking about your upbringing and basically the foundation of who you are.
I grew up on a ranch in western Kansas. I'm the fourth generation owner of it. My great-grandfather homesteaded. It was about 20 miles from any town of substance, which in itself required the necessity of learning how to fix things. I always wondered why my grandfather and my father never threw anything away. We had buckets full of pipes and fittings and you name it. And the reason was back in 1960, it wasn't all that easy to just get in the car and go to town and find a hardware store and buy everything. A lot of times we had to order it to fix it. And so we became self-sufficient. It was a working ranch slash farm. So we had, by today's standards, antiquated equipment. And it was difficult. It broke a lot. You had to be intuitive in how to fix it. And it's kind of led me to my whole life. I've spent my whole life fixing things. So it started with houses. In 1970, when I bought my first house, you could buy a house back then unfinished and the bank would finance it. And they would just reserve in escrow a certain amount of money to finish all these things. I couldn't afford a finished house, so I bought a house that was 60, 70% done, and I finished it. My wife and I budgeted very delicately, I guess I'll say. And I remember it very well. We had $50 extra every month. And I would go to the hardware store or the lumber yard, and I'd buy $50 worth of 2x4s or $50 worth of sheetrock and screws or whatever I needed at the time. And over about 2 years, I was able to finish the house. And from there, I built another home completely, the next one. But then that translated into my career as a businessman. I went into jobs where something wasn't working very well. I started out as a salesman, took over territories that weren't working, then went into an independent career of running businesses. And I spent 15 years almost doing nothing but bankruptcy acquisitions and turnarounds. I took over everything from a 3,000 herd dairy that was foreclosed on by lenders to an engine remanufacturer, a food distribution company, paperback. I printed paperback books at one time. And so all of that stuff was things that were things that needed fixed. And so it's suited my life really well. I love fixing things. I still love fixing things. I don't like to hire people to come into my own home and fix things, although my wife would love me to. You know, what's the old saying that the tradesman never fixes his own house?
The cobbler's children have no shoes, I think, is what the one of the sayings goes. I used to have funny conversations with my dad because he was also brought up in a similar manner. And, you know, he got to the point where he was probably shouldn't have been on the roof. And I would say to him, like, maybe you should just hire someone to get those leaves out of the gutters. And he said, I don't even know who to call. And I kind of laughed, but he was serious. He had no idea who to call. I mean, he'd never called anyone to come help him take leaves out of a gutter or basically anything. You know, at the very end years of his life, he was finally figuring out, you know, what a handyman was, what a what a general contractor, because he just did everything himself, always.
I understand the process. As I said, I just hate to call somebody to come into my house. So we're doing a program called Working with Ward, and they're just little 10-minute segments of things. And it started because we have so many young people working on the show. And one day they asked me to install a door. So I installed a door and I squared it, you know, leveled it, did all the things that you have to do to install a door. And when I was done, the cameraman and the young lady that was recording the sound said, oh my gosh, you ought to have a show. I didn't know how easy it was to install a door.
Right, right.
And I'm like, I mean, everybody doesn't know how to install a door.
Yeah, Devin and I have these conversations all the time. We had one, I think, on a different episode about the things you should know when you move into a house. And Devin and I are both in agreement about, you know, you should know if you have a septic tank or city sewer. You need to know how to, you know, change your filters in your furnace.
I have to admit, when we bought our house, it's the first I had been in apartments my entire adult life. When we bought our house, I had to ask my neighbor to help me find the area, the slot to change a filter in the furnace.
Ah, well, good for you. You knew it was there.
I know. Yeah, I knew it was there because I grew up with the furnace with filter, but I hadn't had one for 30 years.
That's true. That is true.
It's so funny to me, the children, Tamara, I have four children. So I have two daughters, Tamara, and our youngest child is a daughter, and two boys. And I'd always make them work with me. When I was first getting started, I didn't have the wherewithal to hire anybody, so I had to do it. And I didn't think they were learning a thing. I mean, all they were doing was complaining, it seemed like, to me, you know. We got to work on Saturday, you know, and whatever. But when they all moved out, they all took on projects that were just like what we had done. And I was always shocked. I'd go to their house and I'm like, I didn't know you knew how to do this.
Yeah, I remember rolling my eyes an awful lot at my dad and telling him that he could make a 5-minute job into an hour and make it so boring. That's what I remember. This is so boring. This is so boring. But sure enough, it served well. But yeah, we did want to talk about your family. You said you have four kids. You have Tamara, who is the host of Bargain Mansions, and she seems lovely and very passionate about her job.
She is.
You have a younger daughter, and then you have two, I guess, boys in between?
Tamara's oldest, Sarah's youngest, and Caleb and Ben are in the middle. All entrepreneurs in their own way, which I love. I have tried, not only with my children, but I have nine grandchildren, and I have tried to influence them to go into business for themselves. So I'm really proud of all of them. Tamara started by buying a house in 07, I think it was, 06, 07, 08, when foreclosures were rampant. And she bought a 5-bedroom, I think it's 6,000 square foot house that had just been destroyed. The doors were ripped off the hinges. The cabinets were broken. The sheetrock had holes in it. Dogs had been left in the place for 2 weeks. And it was just a mess. And she bought it and just jumped right in and started fixing it. Made a lot of mistakes, of course, but turned out fabulous. My youngest son, Ben, called me. He graduated from college. And he called about 6 months after he graduated and said, "Dad, I bought a house." I said, "What are you talking about? How'd you buy a house? You know, you don't want any money." And he said, "Well, you don't need any money today." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said that you could go buy a house that the bank would loan you the down payment. He said, "For $800, I bought a $120,000 house in what's called the Valentine District of Kansas City down by KU Med Center. And it's this 3-story, really huge home, 100 years old. Limestone foundation. Somebody had started remodeling it, and my understanding was they got sick and had to sell and gave it up. And so we got it with a roof and a new furnace and started rebuilding it. I drove up here every weekend with him, learned to hate 3-story houses.
I'm sitting on the third floor of my house right now.
Your hammer's always on the bottom floor.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Or the basement.
Yeah.
So now I have a hammer on the third floor and a hammer in the basement. And same goes with a vacuum cleaner on the third floor and a vacuum cleaner on the first floor.
I just got so tired. And those old cast iron tubs, they were in really bad shape. And we had to, and the bathrooms were very small. So on the third floor was a cast iron tub that must have weighed 400 pounds. I don't know how my son and I got it out of there and got it down 3 flights of stairs and out the front door and didn't kill ourselves because it was awful. My other son builds really beautiful furniture. He's a registered nurse as well, but he builds live edge furniture and bends it and shapes it and does some incredibly beautiful things. And then my youngest daughter is an entrepreneur with dogs. She always loved animals.
So let's talk about when they were little, if you would, because a lot of our audience, they do have young kids. So what advice would you give them? You said you always made your kids work or take them to work. I mean, what do you think is appropriate for kids as far as the types of work that they do? Maybe in that middle range, like from age 8 to 14 or something like that. What type of work did you feel like you could give your kids? And or was it based on their both interest level and ability?
Well, it wasn't based upon their interest level. That wasn't going to happen. When they're 8, it's pretty difficult. But so I had a business, and on Saturday mornings, I would have them come in and dump the trash in all the trash cans. And and maybe clean the bathrooms, if you will, and just kind of minor things, but taught them responsibility and then reward. So afterwards, we'd go to any restaurant they wanted, and we'd have the biggest breakfast they could have, you know, anything they wanted, pancakes or whatever. As much as learning how to work, we got to spend time together. And
right.
Credit it with why we're still close. I talk to my children regularly. They talk to me. They still ask me about things and advice. And they're all adults. I mean, so you know, they don't need dad so much anymore, but we still talk all the time. We do a lot of things together. We take vacations together. So it's more than just work. It's family. As they got older, I increased the jobs, but something to keep them active, something to reward them with, and taught them the benefits of work, and actually also how to save money. I'd let them spend half of it on anything they wanted, but the other half had to go into, I'll call it a piggy bank.
Well, I can tell by your Instagram account and how you interact, you know, that you are very genuine and definitely family oriented. So it's nice to hear that from you. You know, nice to talk about it today too.
So let's talk about Bargain Mansions with your daughter, Tamara. I watched a few episodes in the last couple of days, trying to catch up on some of it. I'd seen some of the earlier episodes before you joined with her. So you joined in the third season, is that right?
No. I've been in it since the beginning.
Oh, you have?
Not nearly so active as I am now. In the beginning, it was kind of, well, here's dad. Pat her on the shoulder and say, you're doing a great job. That was kind of my job. But it's been really interesting. So we're not very familiar with TV. I don't know. We didn't intend to have a career of being on television. It never crossed our minds. It was a producer that came to town, just the short story, whose parents lived in Kansas City, and he was here to help them as they got older. And he met Tamara and wanted to do what they call a sizzle reel. And she called me up and says, I'm going to do this. And I said, well, this is just a joke. They're going to ask you for payment of something, you know, or she said, no, they're not asking for anything. And I said, okay. And so I happened to be coming through town. I used to live 180 miles west of Kansas City and in a little town called Salina. So I came through town and I pulled in the day they were doing the sizzle reel. And they said, hey, why don't you sit down with Tamara and talk for a little while? I said, okay, that's easy. We talk all the time. And so I did. And the next thing I know, I'm part of the sizzle reel. Having the father participating with his daughter turned out to be a relatively large draw to the audience.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does now. I never thought about it before. But my Instagram account is full of heartbreaking kind of stories about my father left when I was 12 and I haven't seen him since. And I wish I could have worked with him or gotten to know him. Or dad died or whatever happened.
Sure.
As the seasons have went on, they've started involving me more and more until we're doing a fall season right now. We've got 6 episodes that'll air on November 9th on HGTV and 8 what they call repacks, which are shows that we've taken. There's about 30 hours of film in every half hour segment.
Right.
I'm guessing at that, but that's kind of what it is. And so they take pieces of those that didn't make it on the air. So things where I just about electrocute myself, pulling a wire out and sparks are flying, you know, they'll show that on these repacks, which they don't show on the show too often. And as you know, if you've done homes, you know that happens.
Yeah, mistakes happen.
Yeah, you think that power's off and all of a sudden you pull the wires and fire's flying everywhere. So they're showing those and Tamara and I are sitting around and discussing it, just talking about our life together.
Right.
So there'll be 14 shows this fall. The show is using me more and more. I've never filmed so much. So we'll see.
Does Tamara find the houses that are worked on or is there help finding the houses?
Well, I think you could call it help. I mean, there are realtors. There are individuals that communicate with us on a regular basis.
Okay.
Sometimes new ones, sometimes old ones. And they'll say, oh my gosh, you got to look at this mansion on the north side of Kansas City. And it's up for auction. Nobody's lived in it for 10 years. Windows are gone. You know, and so we've done some of that. We've had some incredibly beautiful homes offered to us that are just so big. We can't even begin to work on it. We had one that was 12,000 square feet.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. That'd be a whole season.
Oh, it's more than a season. It was, somebody had already put $1 million into it in rebuilding it in an area that was kind of rough. The street it was on was great, but right in the backyard, there were some pretty bad things going on. So the market for it when you were done with it was very minimal. And they'd already put $1 million in it, and it still needed $2 million more. Had an Irish pub in the basement, all of the old dark walnut. Was absolutely beautiful. I would love to have had it, but I think it had 13 fireplaces.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Can't even begin to tell you how many windows needed replaced. I know you rebuild some windows, but some of these homes, there's no wood left.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm very familiar. Yeah, I'm absolutely familiar. So, and I think, I mean, there is a little difference in that our audience and myself and Devin, we're all fixing our houses to live in them rather than fixing a house to sell to someone else. So there are some balances and some concessions that you make and that Tamara has to make as a businesswoman that we don't have to make in our own houses.
And time constraints on Tamara's side. We don't have the time constraints in the same way.
No, no. I mean, death. Death is my time constraint.
I'm on a 10-year plan for my house. It's going to take me 10 years to finish this house. So, and we're 2 years in and I still say I have 10 years.
Right.
Kind of like my wife. That's what she says about my house. Our house was the very first house on the show, and it was literally falling down. Another 10 years and it would have been in the ground.
Right.
But no, we do have some constraints, and especially because of television. We have about 120 days, maybe, from the time we get a house to getting it finished, and then it goes on the air. And we don't get any slack. I mean, the network said, November 9th, we're going on the air. You have to have the finished episodes by November 1st. And so that really puts some difficulty into it. You know, in today's world, every contractor is as busy as they can be. And I know people think we get messages all the time. How do you get so much work done? Well, it's just impossible. We can't do all of the work. We're doing 14 homes this year, probably 70 to 80,000 square feet. Some of them starting with no windows and heating and AC and ductwork and stuff like that. So you can imagine the extent of what we have to do. Some of them we have to start with the foundation and go up. So yeah, there's real constraints. We have some real difficulties in getting things done right.
I imagine.
Do you find the time constraints can compromise quality of work at times?
That is one thing we refuse to do. We may have to finish it for the show, but we will come back and fix it.
Okay. I have to admit, sometimes when on the final reveals, you'll see, because I see details like nobody else. So I'll be like, I'm not sure I would have finished it quite that way, or I'm not sure I would put that on the market. But I do realize that it is television, and you've got a time constraint, and it's got to get done. But to hear the fact that you do go back in and you do resolve some of those issues. I've always thought about the shows where they like do a whole renovation in 24 hours. I'm like, wait, the paint has to dry. You can't just put stuff on a painted shelf an hour after you paint it and expect it not to stick. And so like, that just doesn't make sense.
Actually, Tamara worked on one of those shows and they did do a house in 24 hours. And it's pretty amazing. So they bring in heaters that heat the house to 100 degrees and dry it right now.
Wow.
But they cheat a little too, you know, and they bring in a 12-foot section of wall and bolt it down.
Right.
Yeah. I imagine the prep work for those shows, I mean, everything's all done in advance, so they can literally have a point where they just, let's start now, and everything's done. But all the work really happens before you get to that point.
Yes. I'm sure you've seen things like fast food restaurants that go up in 90 days and they're open.
Yeah.
Those are dedicated crews. That's a crew that comes in from Springfield, Missouri, if you will. And it's a whole crew. It's plumbers, it's electricians.
And it's all they do.
They know what equipment to have there, what materials, and they show up and they have X number of days to finish their job or they don't get the next one.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, we don't have that benefit.
No, but there must be some, yeah, not that benefit, but there it has to be pretty well orchestrated or else it would just be complete chaos.
Oh, it is. We've gotten popular enough that we do have some of those things finally. The first couple of years, we did not have any of that. And Tamara was killing herself, worrying like crazy. And I give Tamara credit for this show. I don't deserve much of it. She invested. She risked everything to make it a success and gave up everything else she was doing to try to make it work. I, on the other hand, had my career and I was still working it. So I did kind of come in and be that dad that patted her on the shoulder and told her she was doing a great job and don't give up. She did do all of that, but now we have some production people. We have our own general contractor, I guess, if you will. He knows what's right and he knows what's wrong.
Right.
Steve, I love him. He's fabulous. We get to the set to film. Everything's there. We know it's right. It's ready to go.
So over the course of like a 6-month process of start to finish on a house, I'm guessing you film in the beginning and then you film a few weeks later and you film a few weeks later. As the progress happens, you kind of go on site and do the filming for a couple of days and then you kind of have to step away. Or is it something where Tamara has to always kind of be around to like be there at the right moment? Like, do moments have to get recreated?
Well, we're generally doing, I'll say, 4 to 6 houses at one time.
Okay.
And so, yes, we start on, we the show has a formula. And so there's this introduction. We kind of drive up to the house. We look it over. We comment on the things that it's going to need. I make some suggestions. Tamara makes some suggestions. And we come to some agreement. And so some of that is always showing. And then we probably don't come back for a week or two because we're getting things ready to do the demo.
Right.
And then we'll go in and we'll coordinate the demo and we'll do some of the demo. That's pretty fast, pretty easy.
It's great television too.
And I keep looking for that dead body. I still haven't found it. We've found a lot of other things that you probably don't want to talk about on the show. But.
Well, actually, funny that you say that, because I would like to know maybe one of the, maybe like the top 3 weirdest things you found.
It's not so weird, but I mean, we've found drugs hidden in walls. We've found some books that you wouldn't want your children to read.
I found some of those books in my basement. Yeah, and video cassettes. They were hidden on top of one of the heat registers.
Oh, that's funny.
Probably what we find more is people covering up terrible mistakes in construction that they threw some sheetrock over and it looked okay, but you wonder how the place stood. We had one fireplace that I said, Tamara, there's not much reason to clean this. It's got to be re-tuck pointed. And I just went up and grabbed one brick and moved it about 2 inches. And I mean the chimney from the outside and everything fell right into the house.
Oh, no.
Oh, geez.
And there were a lot of 4-letter words like, you know.
That did not make it on air, I'm sure.
I think a lot of the maintenance of houses, I mean, barring the gross stuff and the adult movie stashes, I feel like, you know, things just get away from people. You know, deferred maintenance, deferred maintenance, deferred maintenance is just... I mean, it's one of those things. I live in my own bargain mansion, and let me tell you, it is hard to keep up with.
It is. And it's kind of depressing sometimes because there's always a list. You can never get rid of a list.
Right.
No.
So yeah, I understand totally what you're saying. But you know, it's a labor of love. I do feel good about myself when I fix something. It's kind of like the comparison I always give people is the yard needs mowed. I go out and mow it. And I can step back when it's done and I can look at it and say, oh, wow, that looks really good. I'm really happy with myself. Whereas sometimes you buy an old house, you work on it, you work on it, you work on it. And 6 months later, it's finally done. There's not much immediate gratification unless you take it in steps.
Well, there's always the hidden things in the house, too, that you need structural stuff that ends up getting covered up that nobody ever sees. But it's critical to the house and getting it done right.
Right.
So one of the houses, they had built a second floor, and when they put the exterior wall, they didn't even put it on a floor joist. So the floor joists were 16 inches apart, and they put the exterior wall right at 8 inches, right in the middle. Well, over 40 or 50 years, it had sank almost 5 inches.
Wow.
I went in and literally straightened that. You know, that's not a fix on day one that's permanent, because all the wood has curved.
Sure.
And so you straighten it up, you get the floor level, but the wood is still like this.
Those hidden jobs you mentioned are funny, because we had the chimney rebuilt a couple of years ago on the back of the house, and I've been repointing the stone foundation. And I just keep wanting to say to people, like, hey, would you like to see my chimney? Would you like to see my foundation? Because nobody notices those things. Nobody cares. But, you know, I spent good money and time on both of them.
Isn't it funny how when you do projects yourself, if you make the slightest mistake, even though it's okay, maybe it's not got anything to do with structural integrity. And so it's just not as smooth in that area, maybe as you'd like. It's the first thing I see every time I walk in the room.
Every time. And nobody else will ever notice.
Exactly. But I see it every time. Drives me crazy.
What advice would you give to young homeowners who buy an old house or want to buy an old house?
Buy as much as you can. Meaning size and location. If this is a labor of love, this is going to be your home and you want to raise your children in it and live there a long time, take your time, start at the very base, start at the foundation, make sure it's solid, because without a good solid foundation, it's the old biblical prophecy, build it on sand and it won't stand. Some of these old homes are just incredible because the foundation was done so well that the doors are still square, the windows still work, everything's right. When the center of the house sinks, though, everything gets crooked. Take your time, put a jack under it every month for a year, raise it an inch or whatever it is. Let the house settle. The house moves. Probably most people don't realize that, but a house moves all the time. Cold in the winter, heat in the summer, wind shakes it, vibrates it, whatever, and it'll settle. So move it an inch at a time. Let it settle into place, move it another inch until you get it level, stabilize it, and then start rebuilding the rest of it, and your job will be 10 times easier.
That's wonderful advice. That's great.
It is. Let's say you go back in a time machine and bring a product or a method back that's currently banned or out of favor. What would you choose? Do you have a favorite product from the past?
Well, I hadn't thought about this, so this little impromptu, but one of the things I really love is the old metal ceilings. Like drugstore ceilings, if you will. I think those are, they just have character. I like the handwork that went into building so many things, like just using a handsaw to build stairs and railings and the fitting that was required. And in some of these old homes, when we look at it, maybe the dovetailing or the joinery of it all is really impressive to me. Even though we have modern tools, all battery operated, and I love them, I can't deny it. With those tools, it's really hard to do the same kind of work. We're also modernizing kitchens too. People want bigger kitchens, more cabinetry, more storage, not so much formal dining room anymore. That has not been popular, at least in our world. And so they just want a big eat-in kitchen where the family can be together. And I'm for that 100%.
Well, that's actually was going to be the follow-up question, was what modern product or method that you feel is an upgrade or valuable over something from the past. And it sounds like you're thinking, like you said, a nice eat-in kitchen, a place where the family can be together, that sort of thing. Kitchens are always tricky, too, because so many times they have been redone more than once over the lifespan of the house. So, I mean, for instance, my house was built in 1885 and I had a 1940s kitchen with some 60s upgrades. So not only was it not functional for my family, but it also wasn't appropriate for the house anymore. It was kind of just like a sore thumb sticking out of my house all the time. There are times, especially when I watch these shows, where I feel less attached to certain rooms of the house that have been done over so many times that they're not in the character of the house anyway. I will admit that in our audience circles, that's not exactly the most popular point of view, but I'm okay with that. I guess we're not always going to agree about every single thing, which is kind of what makes the world go round and how we can help each other, I think.
Well, interesting that you discussed that, because my ranch house on my ranch in Western Kansas is 100 years old and went through four modernizations. So my great grandfather lived there, my grandfather, my father, and I don't live there, but I do stay there a lot. It's our vacation. When COVID started, we spent 2 months there and loved every minute of it. But it had metal cabinetry in the kitchen. It was, I think, the second or third renovation, second. And I found it in the back of one of the old sheds. It had been dry all this time, so it was still good. I brought it out and re-enameled it so it had enameling. And I bought this enamel kit, and I'd never done it before. I just tried it. It turned out really well. And I put it in the laundry room that I built onto the house when I remodeled 3 years ago. I totally gutted the house. There was four different electrical boxes. The plumbing leaked everywhere. The sewer was non-existent. And so I, after my parents moved out, I'm setting it at one night, and all I could hear is little hisses all over the house and water leaking in the basement. So I just had to make a decision, either burn it and start over or rebuild it. And I didn't have the heart to build new. So I rebuilt it, and it's lovely. It's 1,400 square feet. My father had cut down trees, walnuts, black walnuts, red cedar, and ash off of the farm. And they must have been large trees because he had them cut into 3 and 4 inch planks. And so they were sitting in the back of a shed for the last 50 years, never used. I dug them all out. I took them to a guy, and he made countertops for me. Cabinets are one of the bathroom vanity is made out of red cedar that was off the farm. So I redid it all, and I tried to do it in period correct where I could. But at least the kitchen, I actually used the old granary, the yellow pine that was falling down. So I salvaged the lumber, and I used the yellow pine as a backdrop for all of the kitchen. So the cook area and all of that is a full wall of 3-inch yellow tongue and groove pine. And it looks fabulous. I wish I could show you pictures.
Oh, well, if you've got them, we'd love to put them on the show notes.
I can definitely send you a bunch of pictures.
Oh, that would be great. We'd love that. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us today?
Well, one is that I would appreciate the audience following both Tamara at Tamara Day on Instagram and myself. It's a big benefit to us to know what our audience wants to comment on and wants to see. Also is important to the network that we have a good following. We have grown from, I think, our first sizzle show, or not sizzle, but first show, I think we had 85,000 viewers. Last spring, I think we had something close to 2.5 million per show.
That's great.
We're getting a following, and it's great. We hope to continue to do it, and it's fun to do. It's fun to work with my daughter. Even though we don't get to visit a lot because we're wired, don't get to
not a lot of private conversation going on.
Yeah, we can't say, you know, too many things about the family. It's kind of amazing. I don't know if you've been on a set, but 10 to 20 people on the set. And in fact, one of my Working with Ward shows is going to be, I'm going to interview our lead photographer and let the audience know what it takes to video a program. Because I don't think anybody has any idea that there's 30 hours for every half hour episode.
And I would say that your show, Working with Ward, is, I know it's on Instagram. Is it also on YouTube or just on Instagram?
It's on both.
Okay. But I think it's interesting. I know it's just developing. It's kind of starting and developing. But I think that people, our audience, could find some of the topics really interesting. I think there's one show like how to install a sump pump, and you've restored your Jeep. And just so people who like to do things and make things and fix things, I think it has really good content for you.
Well, I only have to correct you on one thing, and it's not a Jeep, it's a Bronco.
Oh.
There are Facebook private pages, and anybody that comments about a Jeep on the Bronco page gets lambasted, and anybody lambasted if they post anything about a Bronco. So.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, leave it to me. I usually know what I'm doing, but I don't always know the term for what I'm doing or what the part that I'm using. You know, I'm using the thing to do the thing to fix the, you know. So that's kind of how it works with me. But it gets done. So I always tell people who are listening, I'm like, just because you don't know the proper term for something doesn't mean you cannot fix it. You are capable.
Couldn't agree more. Hand me that thing. You know, that thing.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
All right. Oh, Ward, thank you so much for being here. It was a lovely conversation. So nice to get to know you better.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
We really appreciate you taking time for us.
I love these old houses.
During the interview, we had a little sound snafu making Ward's Instagram handle difficult to understand. You can follow him on Instagram at Ward Schrader. That's S-H-R-A-E-D-E-R. And we'll put a link right in the show notes too. For more information about this episode, including show notes and transcripts, visit TrueTalesFromOldHouses.com.
Until next time.
Bye for now.